press 1. Leave a message.
That's very strange.
Let me try again. I've tried
9
times.
Yeah, I don't know. That's strange. If not, try this alternate number. I don't know if it'll work in terms of getting through to the studio, but there's an alternate number you can try.
Okay, 1 second. Let me try this one more time.
Yeah, definitely. That's weird. Why? I don't think that's the case. That's strange because I've had before the pandemic, I had Mike Comito on. He's in Ontario. That's what I'm thinking. Like I've had someone on the other side of the border call in. I'm like, that can't be the case. It's probably the way that it's set up, but there's an alternate number that you can try. Maybe 781-350-3264.
Okay.
See if that works. I have no idea, but it's worth a try. Ah, now we're getting in. Now we're in. Hold on. Joins the program now on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Good afternoon to you, Nick. Thank goodness we're finally able to get through this malaise and finally be able to get this thing sorted out. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. I don't know if I'm as good as you after the weekend you had at Fenway. I saw on Instagram.
My voice has been literally cracking. Like, I mean, that's been the only negative, and I guess I can't even say if it's a negative, especially given that the Yankees swept the Red Sox, but either way, I'm excited to have you on, man. Like, I mean, and this is the first program back in studio since March 13th of last year, so it's very meaningful, to say the least.
Well, welcome back, and certainly we have the hockey season on the mend, and as you know, I'm a big-time baseball fan, a big week ahead for my Toronto Blue Jays as well, as you know.
Yeah, you got the Blue Jays coming up against the New York Yankees beginning tomorrow. In fact, before I even get to the hockey, let's start there. The Blue Jays, they are fighting tooth and nail to remain in the American League wild card, and they've gotten into a little bit of a slump most recently, and Nick, I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on this battle that's coming up, 3 games between the Yankees and the Blue Jays beginning tomorrow?
I think it's going to be something special. I think for the most part, because of the crowd they're expected to have, as you know, here in Canada, it's been slow moving to get attendance up to where you guys have been at in the States for quite some time. And they've actually extended the attendance from 15,000 to 30,000 for this series. So, whatever happens, I can tell you it's going to be a raucous building, the home crowd for the Blue Jays, which they haven't seen a lot of the last couple of years. And I'm really excited for it. Like, the Yankees had an outstanding weekend against the Boston Red Sox. Joe West helped them out last night. Always great to see that. Of course, the home plate umpire and that terrible missed call in that game. But I'm not a man of excuses. So I think for the Blue Jays, they're going to go out there and they're going to take care of business, in my opinion.
Oh, for sure. No question. And I got to ask you about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., because he right now is my American League MVP for 2021. We all know about Shohei Ohtani, what the Angels and what he's been able to do two ways, both on the mound and as well as with the bat as well. if you had to vote for the American League MVP in 2021, are you going with Shohei Ohtani of the Angels, or are you going with Vladimir Guerrero Jr.?
It's really tough to quantify. I'll be honest in saying it would be difficult to go against Vladimir Guerrero. Having said that, I think it's such a unique situation. You look at Shohei Ohtani, just his dominance on the mound, his dominance at the plate. I think it's important to remember as well, Mike Trout's missed the majority of this season. The Angels aren't a very good team. So it's all dependent on the voters and how they quantify what an MVP truly is, because you just look at the numbers. Vladimir Guerrero is the best offensive player in baseball right now. There's no other way around it. I think Tatis obviously is close in San Diego, but the type of year that Guerrero has had, now people can make that argument that, hey, those guys around him really help and they insulate him well. I get that. And I think the other argument will be when it comes to Shohei Ohtani is the fact that he's been quite dominant at two positions, which, again, is very uncanny, and we've never really seen it before since, like, the days of Babe Ruth. That's the conversation, but I just think the season Vladdy has had, it would be difficult, especially if this Jays team finds a way to get in. It would be difficult in my world, and granted, I'm a bit biased being here in Toronto to vote against Vladdy.
Now, being in Toronto, we're going to switch to NHL now. We entered the 2021-2022 NHL season with a truculent of headlines. I want to start with the Toronto Maple Leafs, because that is a team that you know well. You were the host of Leafs on Leafs Nation pregame, pre and postgame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto. Now, after the collapse that they had last season in the first round against Montreal Canadiens, who went on to go to the Stanley Cup Finals, and the changes that they made during the offseason, what are your expectations as it pertains to the Toronto Maple Leafs in 2021-2022? And do you think that this is finally the season that they finally break through and are able to finally get out of the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Well, I would say it's pretty much all or nothing. Certainly, I guess in this current iteration of this team with the big megastars they have and the four players they paid in excess of $40 million to, that's just pretty much what it's coming down to. You know, this team hasn't won a playoff series in almost two decades, if you can believe it, and that certainly is weighing heavily in this market. For a team who prides itself on being potentially a Stanley Cup contender, you haven't won a playoff series in almost two decades. It's pretty worrisome, I think, if you ask me. So the pressure is on this team, from their star players all the way to their fourth liners, to their new goaltending situation now with Peter Mrazek into the fold, to the brain trust, Brendan Shanahan, Kyle Dubas, the general manager. There's a ton of pressure, and I think, again, working against the Maple Leafs as well this season is the fact that they're returning to the old Atlantic Division, and there's some really, really good teams in there. So they're going to be tested off the bat, where you look at last year in the All-Canadian Division, the North Division, they were pretty much a shoo-in from puck drop of the season to make the Stanley Cup playoffs. Now I think they're going to be in a battle for their lives just to make the postseason this year. So there's a lot of pressure on this team. There's no doubt there's talent on this roster, and we'll see if they can put it together this time around.
I was telling someone last week that there is going to be a team that has at least 90 points, if not more, and not make the playoffs because of how good the Atlantic Division is going to be this season. And among the teams that the Maple Leafs are going to be contending against are the Boston Bruins. And this question is going to be 100% geared towards the Boston Bruins, in which that the biggest question mark that I have for the Bruins going into the 2021-2022 season is the goaltending situation. Do you think that the Bruins are going to be able to ride out Linus Ullmark as starting goaltender until whenever Tuukka Rask is able to return healthy? And if so, do you think it will be with Jeremy Swayman being the backup on the Boston Bruins?
Well, firstly, I think it's imperative to bring up, like, Linus Ullmark is a fantastic goalie, and there's a reason why they paid him, what, $5 million this season
yes.
to perform as potentially a number one goalie. Having said that, he has had an injury-riddled past. He had 20 appearances last year. He hasn't played more than 40 games in any NHL season ever in his career. He's 28. So I get it. I mean, there's some concern certainly there. I think there's got to be more respect in the name of Jeremy Swayman, who, again, small sample size last year, gets his shot, and I thought he performed admirably. I do think Linus Allmark can do it, and I'm not sold that Tuukka Rask is going to be back with this Boston Bruins team. It's all great that Tuukka wants to be back, but do they really need him? Hoping, I guess, that a guy like Jeremy Swayman could take that next step. But then you look at a reason why Dan Vladar is no longer with this team is they thought Swayman could be the guy, right?
So yeah.
I'm not sold on the pundits out there that suggest that Tuukka Rask necessarily is going to be back. Again, it's great that he wants to be back, but this Allmark signing, you know, leads me to believe that Boston may have turned the page a bit here. I don't know if you feel the same way.
I felt the same way when the signing first took place, in which I said, and I was saying this at the time, that you don't pay someone $5 million to be a backup goaltender. That's not backup goaltender money. What they were paying Anton Khudobin and then Jaroslav Halak, that was backup goaltending money. You don't pay someone $5 million to sit on the bench and just ride shotgun. And I am really curious to see, even if the Bruins were to pay Tuukka Rask minimum, because he's not even on payroll right now. He's still a UFA, so to speak. I think that if they were to bring him back, if, and that's a bigger, because he had that surgery to recover from that the hip injury that he had. And I wonder, if you are the Bruins, if you're Don Sweeney in particular, what is exactly the plan for the goaltender position for the future? Because all indications are that Swayman is not going to be the starter this season, barring injury, and that they're willing to go with Allmark in hopes that he could stay healthy and be that number one goaltender that they believe that he can be.
Well, I think the expectation is that Jeremy Swayman is going to push Linus Allmark in between the pipes. I think any successful team in this league, especially in this day and age, is having a tandem system in place where you can rely on both guys heavily. And, of course, the Boston Bruins, one of the initial teams that have had sort of that impact the last couple of years in having Jaroslav Halak, the aforementioned one, and Tuukka Rask is a great 1-2 punch. So that's my expectation. I think they're obviously rather cognizant of the history of Linus Allmark and the fact that he does come with some baggage. But when healthy, he's a really, really good goalie. Like, that intrigues me beyond belief, is Linus Allmark now on an actually really good hockey team and how he fares and what his numbers look like. So I would expect Jeremy Swayman to push him for some starts as the season progresses. And I think luckily for Boston, they can reassess the situation as the season goes on and as they know more about Tuukka Rask. You know, reading right now, they just have under $2 million of cap space. So I don't know what a potential contract midseason would look like for Tuukka Rask, but I'm sure if they had the need to get a goalie or find a goalie and Rask made sense, they would make it happen, right? So I think they're lucky in that respect. They have sort of a wild card to play in potentially Tuukka Rask later on this season.
We are talking with Nick Alberger of Sportsnet here on the Shukri Wright Show, 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford. The question that a lot of Bruin fans are wondering is, what are they going to do to replace David Krejci on that second-line center position? And one thing that has stood out to me already is that Jastrzenica has looked absolutely explosive. But a lot of people are expecting that Charlie Coyle ends up being the starting second-line center that's going to be in the middle in between Taylor Hall and Craig Smith. How do you see this battle shaping out as we head towards the latter stages of training camp, and as well as, do you believe that Jastrzenica can take on a top six role, replacing a guy in Krejci in which he's been an absolute warhorse, if you will, for the Boston Bruins over the last several years, especially in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, because when you posed the initial question about the goaltending, I automatically thought about my biggest other concern for Boston this season, and that was a 2C. I just think, you know, it goes without saying, the importance of David Krejci to that team for, you know, X amount of years, and not having him in the lineup, I think we're really going to start to see the worth and value of David Krejci. I'm not sure Charlie Coyle is going to be the answer at 2C. Obviously, they re-signed Taylor Hall like that. Craig Smith had an outstanding second half. I thought he was good in the postseason as well. But I think you need to find sort of another type guy. I don't know if it's Thomas Nosek. I don't know if it's Eric Halla. But maybe a veteran guy steps up. And I think, to your point, I think a Jastrzenica here in training camp specifically will get every shot to crack. Because I think at this point in Charlie Coyle's career, we know what he is, and that's not a second-line center, with all due respect. I think he's a really responsible player. I think he's fantastic on a third-line look. I just don't think he is good enough up the middle to be on a second line with a playmaker, a guy who can finish as well in Taylor Hall, and a veteran like Craig Smith has done it year in and year out for a big chunk of time here in his NHL career. So I'm sure they'll look at a couple different things, but I think Studnicka could have the inside track here, depending on how he continues to perform, here in training camp, because I just don't know if Coyle is going to be the option. I know people are looking at Coyle. I just don't know if he's going to be the guy there.
If you were a betting man, in which you say, which free agent signing was going to have the most profound impact for the Boston Bruins in 2021-2022 between Eric Halla, Nick Foligno, Derek Forbort, and Thomas Nosek. If you had a pick between those four guys that I mentioned, which player do you believe will have the most profound impact on this roster, given what the needs were going into the new season?
Well, I think if healthy, the answer is Nick Foligno, but that's a big if. Like, of course, I saw him front and center here in Toronto for a handful of games, and it was a fact. He was not healthy. I don't know if it happened before or during his time here in Toronto, maybe previous when he was at Columbus. Who knows how the offseason has gone for Nick Foligno. He's got a lot of miles under his track, but I still think he's a really good player. And again, you know, that conversation at 2C, like, don't be shocked if Nick Foligno finds himself centering that second line. I think, again, they're going to try different things out. Foligno had a couple stints at center for the Maple Leafs in a small time, ditto for his time in Columbus, and he's the guy to answer your question. I think in general, I really liked what Boston did in the offseason, some of the veterans they picked up on value deals. Eric Halla, we saw what he did specifically a couple years ago with Vegas. Thomas Nosek, another guy by way of the Golden Knights, who I think can add a lot of pep in the bottom six there. And, you know, the versatility is the thing that really caught me, is the fact that these guys could play on the fourth line, they can play on the third line, they can play on your second line. And that's the Swiss Army knife-type mentality is a newfound approach in this day and age of the NHL world the last couple of years. And when you have a lot of guys who can do that, I think you're sitting pretty, and that gives you the ability to have options in that conversation, again, for second-line pivots. So to answer your question, it's Nick Foligno. I just think he has the highest ceiling, but I'm not sure how healthy he is right now.
We're talking with Nick Alberga of Sportsnet here on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford, streaming nationwide on the TuneIn Radio app. Nick, one of the big question marks as it pertains to the NHL as a whole, in terms of storylines heading into the season, is the Winter Olympics. And I've talked about this in several different tweets. And the more I think about it, the more fired up I get. And it's specifically as it pertains to Team Canada. I think it is absolutely so flipping unfair how deep Team Canada is just in the forward group alone. And if you are the general manager of Team Canada and you're constructing this roster that's heavily favored to win gold in Beijing come February, what are some key guys that are right off the bat that you're going to say, this guy should make the team, but he is going to be a bubble player? Your thoughts.
Well, right away, you pose the question. Like, I think of the name Drew Doughty, right?
Yeah.
You know, it depends when people are inputting their rosters, but sometimes Drew Doughty's on it, sometimes he's not. You know, people would laugh at the conversation of even, say, like a Zach Hyman. I'm not sure he's going to make it. You just mentioned how deep the forward core is for that team. But I'm interested to see guys who are on the outside or the bubble conversation, how they perform in the first half of the season, like Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, those type of names come to mind. And again, Drew Doughty, to bring it full circle, is another guy. Like, I think you're right. There's just, and I'm not saying this because I'm Canadian, there's just so much depth on this Canadian roster that it's going to be tough for any team to play against them here in the Olympics. And hopefully, fingers crossed, it does happen, because again, COVID is still a thing in this world, and who knows what could happen in the next couple months. But tentatively, it's going down. You know, I'm curious to see how some of these guys play in the first half of the season, because guaranteed there's going to be a couple guys on every roster, which we're probably not prognosticating right now, but could potentially make the team Because I like the fact that every Olympics, and we've seen it with the Chris Drapers of the world, the Kirk Maltbys of the world, you know, they get that shot to perform, and then, you know, they pick their team, which is great to see. So I think there's going to be a couple guys that shock some people.
There are a couple of teams that I look at in the NHL, and I say that team has a world of pressure going into the 2021-22 season. When you look at the general league landscape overall, what are the teams for you that you look at and you say, this team has to go very deep into the NHL playoffs, perhaps even better yet, win the Stanley Cup outright? And for me, that team is Colorado, because at the beginning of the playoffs last year, the Avalanche seemed like they were going to be this freight train team that was going to completely just steamroll everyone. But everything fell apart against the Vegas Golden Knights in the second round. Would you agree with that assessment that the Avalanche are that team in the Western Conference as of right now that you say that team is going to be a team on a mission that could very well make its run to the Stanley Cup Finals?
Yeah, like they have to be. I think, you know, a betting favorite or a co-favorite at this point in time with the Tampa Bay Lightning, who have won back-to-back Stanley Cups to win the Cup this year. I just think, again, you look on paper, which is important to bring up. It's just paper and not real action. Mm-hmm. They have a star-studded roster. You know, they bring back Captain Gabriel Landeskog, playing with MacKinnon and Rantanen. Nazem Kadri's their 2C. He's in a contract year. There's just so much depth. And then you look in the back end, Cale Makar is an up-and-coming defenseman who is a top-three defenseman in this league and still has potential to grow. Bowen Byram is another guy to look at this season and maybe take that next step. Samuel Girard's a fantastic defenseman. Devon Taves. And then you add the fact that they lose Philip Grubauer in free agency. He goes to the new team in the league, the Seattle Kraken. And then they trade for Darcy Kemper, who's also in a contract year, who is also on a team like Arizona, who just wasn't that good the last couple of years. And he's another, you know, comparable, I would say, to Linus Allmark. Now that he's on a really good team, It'll be intriguing to see if Darcy Kemper can take that next step, perhaps, into the Vezina conversation. So I think you look on paper at Colorado, it's hard to argue against this team, but as we've learned year in and year out, it's another thing to be a highly touted team. It's another thing to go and prove it. Just ask the Tampa Bay Lightning, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially like how long it took for them to finally break through before winning back-to-back cups in 2020 and obviously this past summer and whatnot. And speaking of the Seattle Kraken, I feel like a lot of people are going to be spoiled by what we witnessed 4 years ago with the Las Vegas Golden Knights and how incredible of a Cinderella run it was for the Vegas Golden Knights to make that run to the Stanley Cup Finals that they did in their first year of existence. But when you look at the Seattle Kraken and you look at this roster, and I see guys like, as you mentioned, Philip Grubauer, Jordan Eberle, Mark Giordano, for example, I just don't get the feeling that this is the type of team that could pull off something very similar to what Vegas did 4 years ago. What are your expectations for the Seattle Kraken in their first year in 2021-2022?
Yeah, it's funny because people have been very hesitant to discount Seattle right away, and that's more so because of what Vegas did, who, by the way, the Golden Knights, unbelievably, are in year five already. It seems like last year they came into the league, but so be it. I think the expectation is there, the precedence that the Vegas Golden Knights set 5 years ago, that our expectation, and maybe it's more so because of the expansion rules in this day and age, is that they're going to be a rather competitive team. And then you combo that with the fact that they're in the Pacific Division, who is, you know, pretty much led by Vegas and then everybody else. Like, I think that division is wide open, and I think it gives teams like Los Angeles and maybe even Seattle an opportunity to make the Stanley Cup playoffs. When I look at the current iteration, the way the roster is built, as mentioned, like the goaltending quite a bit, Philip Grubauer, obviously in the conversation last year, you know, a guy who was just simply tremendous for that team and what he did in Colorado. So certainly I think when you start from that situation and you have a guy who is a Vezina finalist last year, you're feeling damn good, I think, if you're Seattle. And then you complement that with Chris Drieger behind him, it's always great. I like their back end quite a bit as well, guys like Vince Dunn and Adam Larson and Jamie Oleksiak is going to bring some size and speed to that roster. And the veteran Mark Giordano, I think, will lead that power play. But I still, you look up front, I still wonder where the offense is going to come from. I know Yanni Gourde, who came by way of Tampa, is banged up, won't start the season. He's probably, in my opinion, the most talented forward they have. But outside of that, they got guys like Jaden Schwartz. They got guys like Jared McCann. It's more secondary, tertiary pieces. And granted, we were having probably the same conversation in Vegas' first year, and they found a way to provide plenty of offense. So I would say never doubt Seattle. I think if you were to ask me right now, which you are, I think they're going to be a tough team at the very least to play against. I can't go out and say, hey, they're going to win the Stanley Cup this season, but I think they're going to make it tough on their opponents. And that's all I think they can pretty much ask and wish for in their inaugural season in this league.
How magical is the rivalry going to be between Vancouver and Seattle? Because I have a feeling that this is going to really open a lot of eyes.
Yeah, it should. Like, right, they played last night in the preseason. I thought it was a great spectacle. I do think the colors play well on TV, which is always great to see, and it's a great mix with Vancouver and Seattle. But, you know, it's important to stress that you just because geography makes sense, you can't just, you know, make up a rivalry. You can't, it's got to be organic, right? Like, I think if you do remember, they tried this with Vegas and Arizona, and it got nowhere, right? Like, so I think my expectation is now is, you know, if Seattle's a tough team to play against and they're going to be a tough out every night, then, you know, people want to watch good teams play. I think the expectation is Vancouver will take another step in the right direction this season. Remains to be seen what happens here with Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson. Their RFAs right now still unsigned without contracts. But I think it cures a lot in terms of trying to manifest, if you will, a rivalry or bud this rivalry, if you will, is when two teams are good. So I think that's the hope from everybody involved, is that both teams are good, and that adds to this rivalry and it gets it off the ground right away.
We're talking with Nick Alberger of Sportsnet on the Sugar Ride Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Last question I'll ask you. The New York Rangers are one of the teams in the East that, coming into the new season, there is a new set of expectations that the organization has set upon itself. They have to make the playoffs. They haven't made the playoffs since 2017 when they lost in six games to the Ottawa Senators. And Mika Zibanejad came out and made it very clear that we have to make the playoffs. They went out and made moves during the offseason. They brought in Ryan Reeves, as many people look at it and say that was in response to the incident with Tom Wilson and Brendan Smith from last season. And if you're looking at the New York Rangers now, in which that they're going to be starting the year with the new head coach, Gerard Gallant, what are your expectations for the New York Rangers? And do you think that this roster, currently stands, is ready to take that next step into becoming legitimate Stanley Cup contenders or even playoff contenders for that fact of the matter?
Yeah, my expectations are high for the New York Rangers. You know, it's important to bring up what happened to finish off last season. Now you have a new head coach in Gerard Gallant, or all he has done in the NHL is one win. He won at the World Championship this past spring with Team Canada. Now he's got a new objective, a new job, the New York Rangers. They got Chris Drury as their GM now. As you mentioned, their answer to their Tom Wilson problem by way of Ryan Reeves, and I believe the Rangers and the Capitals are getting together in their first game of the season. That's going to be must-see TV. I can tell you that right now, that the Rangers won't be pushed around anymore. We saw what happened in Vegas. We saw in his time in Pittsburgh, Ryan Reeves is a tough customer, probably the toughest hombre in this league right now. So from a physicality standpoint, they're not going to be bullied around again the way they sort of did and were by the Washington Capitals last year. I think from an offensive standpoint, there's more than enough, and I think the expectation is that Mika Zibanejad won't start as poorly as he did last year. But I tend to give a lot of these guys mulligans. Like, last season was weird, as you know, with COVID and everything and travel and the interdivisional play. Like, it was just different. And we are humans. We do forget that watching professional athletes, these individuals playing, are humans. And we just don't know the factors behind the scenes. So the Rangers are a team I thought would take a step last year. They didn't, but I'm giving them a mulligan. And I think you look at this upcoming season, They got the goaltending. Watch out for Igor Shesterkin, who I think could be in the Vezina conversation. He's unbelievable. And you look at the fact that they have the Norris winner and Adam Fox, who, by the way, is just 23 years of age. They have all the ingredients to be a really, really good hockey club. The only thing I would say to add and finish up the conversation is they're in a really, really difficult division in that Metro. Columbus is not going to be a good team. Carolina's excellent. The Capitals, I think, still are a playoff team. Pittsburgh, you got gamers on that roster. They're going to find a way. I think Philadelphia is in complete bounce-back mode. I like what they've done in the offseason. Their expectation is Carter Hart's going to have a much better year. The Islanders are a bona fide cup contender, in my opinion. And the Devils are on the upswing. So that's the only, you know, card I would throw up in favor of the Rangers not, you know, turning it up and being a playoff team this season is the fact that they're in a really, really difficult division in that Metro. So they got to step their game here.
Nick Alberga of Sportsnet, thank you so much for joining the program today. Very appreciated. And I look forward to having you back on the program to talk some more hockey, especially once the new season begins October 12th. It's going to be a big one. I can't wait.
My pleasure. Welcome back, and go Blue Jays.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining the show.
Take care.
That was Nick Alberga of Sportsnet, who joined the program right here on the Sugar Right Show at 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Coming up next, Lauren Campbell of Nesson is going to join the program just momentarily. You are listening to the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. This is Shukri Wright. You are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Touch me from radio streaming nationwide on a TuneIn Radio app. MFO. WMFO.
Into the streets, we're coming out. We never sleep, never get tired. Through urban fields and suburban life. Turn the crowd up now, we'll never back down. Shoot down the skyline, watch it on prime time. Turn up the love now, listen up now. Turn up the love. Who's gonna save the world tonight? Who's gonna bring it back to life?
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford, Touch Free Form Radio, streaming nationwide on the TuneIn Radio app, globally on WMFO.org. Before I forget, and I just remembered this, I got to play this PSA real quick as part of my requirements. And it's brought to you by yours truly here at 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford. So give me about 60 seconds.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Sugar Right Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Touch free from radio streaming nationwide on the TuneIn radio app globally on WMFO.org. Lauren Campbell of Nesson, she's on the program now, on the line waiting patiently, and as classy, funny, and entertaining as she is on social media, she does outstanding work for Nesson. Check out her work on Nesson.com. She joins the program now. Lauren, how are you doing on this final Monday of September, which is hard to believe?
It's crazy hard to believe. I'm doing wonderful, and I'm so happy to be able to connect with you again, Shukri. It's been too long.
Oh, seriously, it's been way too long. Wait, how long has it been? Like, the last time I spoke to you was, it was the podcast. I think I did with you and Matt McCarthy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, we were talking some Bruins playoffs. It seems like so long ago now.
Yeah. Don't remind me. Like, I guess it's part of the age of where I'm getting old, where I'm forgetting, like, how long it's been, you know. But what I haven't forgotten is the weekend that was, Yankees-Red Sox. Now, I was at all three games over the weekend, and it was, I can't believe I'm even saying this, but it really was even more electric than I could have imagined. With everything that's on the line right now, and right now currently the Yankees being in the first American League wildcard spot, and the Red Sox going into the weekend series, they were in first. Now they're in second place in the American League wildcard spot. Lauren, what happened over the weekend? Like, what are some of your overall observations and takes as to what went wrong for the Boston Red Sox this past weekend against the Yankees?
Yeah, I mean, it was, the Red Sox had two very winnable games in their hands and they let them get away. And it's this bullpen. I think that this bullpen has been, it was good in the beginning of the season, and then things started to kind of fall apart. They started to find their groove again, and now they're kind of falling apart again. And I know with Garrett Whitlock on the IL, he's been one of the big guys that's been coming in clutch throughout so many moments in this season. Not having him, Matt Barnes not being what he was in the beginning of the year, Adam Ottavino being overused, you know, it's just, it's a lot. It's the end of the season. I know that these guys are tired, but this was such an important series for both teams. And it was clear the Yankees wanted it more. They had more fight in them. And Alex Cora said it best, I think, last week after the Red Sox swept the Orioles. He said, when you play bad baseball, you're going to lose. But when you play good baseball, you're going to give yourself a chance to win. And there wasn't a lot of good baseball played in the later innings by the Red Sox this weekend.
I was stunned. I was stunned by two moves in particular. And by all means, I want you to tell me if you would agree with the following assessment I'm about to make. Saturday, the Red Sox are up 2-1 in the eighth inning. And they bring in Darwinson, the left-hander, to face Giancarlo Stanton, which, in my mind, he eats left-handed pitching. Why would you bring in a left-hander after pulling out a right-hander who faced the previous batter, which I couldn't believe? And then the second one, and this probably is a bigger one, was last night, the Aaron Judge at-bat that the Red Sox Nation is still talking about today. The strike three that wasn't a strike three. And then the next pitch, Aaron Judge looping a two-run double that gave the Yankees the lead. How would you assess the managing of Alex Cora these last two games, in which I would say he made two critical mistakes that have cost the Red Sox dearly? Would you agree or disagree, and why?
So for the first one, with removing a right-hander for a left-handed pitcher, I was very confused by that too. You know, Alex Cora, over his time managing the Red Sox, has made some questionable in-game managerial decisions. And sometimes they work out and he looks like a genius, and other times they don't and comes back to bite him. And this certainly was one of the times to do it. You know, Stanton is incredible. against left-handers. We know what he can do. We've seen it all season. We've seen it throughout his career as well. Mm. And it just happened that the Red Sox were his next victim. And he absolutely showed them why that was a mistake to remove the pitcher. But with the strike three call, unfortunately, it was an unreviewable play. You couldn't challenge it. Alex Cora's hands are tied. However, maybe he could have had the umpire go out to the umpires and talk to them. Maybe Christian Vasquez also could have, he knew that it's very clearly foul tipped. He caught it. He should have been losing his mind. He should have been, not up in Joe West's face by any means. We don't want anyone getting into
yeah.
the umpires. I probably would have. But, say something. You clearly caught the ball. And he just kind of was like, oops, I dropped it afterward. But I was like, I'm very confused on what's happening here. Because at first, in real time, he's like, oh, maybe that wasn't foul tipped, whatever. And then as clear as day was, like, why is nobody, even though it's not, you can't challenge it.
Yeah.
Why is Christian Vasquez not losing his mind? Why is Alex Cora not coming out? Like, did they see something we didn't? But is this obviously a very game-changing play? Joe West also behind the plate. And, I don't like being the one to, the refs, all the umps. But his track record and his history of blown calls, bad calls, no calls, is very well known. And this just happens to be one that's going to be added to his resume at the end of this year.
A weekend that I'm sure either Yankee fans or Red Sox fans or neither one are going to ever forget. And as far as the weekend that was in Boston sports, man, if I could set fire ablaze to either Boston Sports Twitter or Red Sox Twitter, I think I've managed to do both on back-to-back nights. I'm gonna just be very off the rail with this one. What is your personal take on Sweet Caroline? Because I've got to a point where I eviscerated the Boston Red Sox and whoever's in charge of playing music at Fenway for playing Sweet Caroline immediately after giving up the go-ahead grand slam to Giancarlo Stanton. What is your opinion on Sweet Caroline?
I knew this was coming. You really did set Twitter ablaze. You certainly did. And, traditions, they can be fun. Traditions are traditions. But I also think there's a time and place for everything.
Yes.
So, I think that as much fun as Red Sox fans have, it shouldn't be played when they're losing desperately, like when they're down really big or when they have an inning like that where they give up their lead and the life is just sucked out of Fenway. I understand maybe it can put life back into the fans. It can put life back into the players. But, at the end of the day, there's a time and place for it. And it's as much fun as I have had screaming it before at the top of my lungs. I would just feel very weird if the Red Sox were like, and I've been in a situation like I've been to many, many Red Sox games over my life here.
Yeah.
And there's times I'm like, I'm going to the bathroom. I'm going to go grab another drink or something. It's too much. Like, I don't want to be part of this. Just time and place for everything, right? If the Red Sox are up or if it's a really close game, they have a big inning, get out of the inning in a big way. Sure. But when they're losing a very important series, No. If they're down three or more runs, then that should not be played.
We're talking with Lauren Campbell of NESN right here on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Lauren, there's one question in particular in which that Boston sports fans know that this is the week that this conversation has to be had. Brady is returning in 6 days to Gillette Stadium, Foxborough, Sunday Night Football, Bucks, Patriots, the most anticipated regular season game of all time. And I say that unbiasedly. But we all know locally the headlines. Brady's coming back. Did Bill Belichick really want Tom Brady to return? You must have heard about the comments that were made today about Belichick saying that we didn't want Tom Brady to leave. So if Bill Belichick did not want Tom Brady to leave, and Tom Curran asked a really good question, and I'm gonna preface it in my own way, why didn't Bill Belichick create more of a sustainable roster in which they was going to compliment Tom Brady in terms of his skill set, in terms of weapons, and instead of him opting to leave to go to Tampa Bay, and obviously, as we all know, winning a Super Bowl in his first season with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
Yeah, that is the age-old question there. I don't know if it was just Bob Kraft and Bill Belichick having too much confidence in Brady to kind of do his thing with the bare minimum. And Julian Edelman, obviously, with dealing with injuries, and you can't rely on an older running back, older wide receiver. It's just you can't rely on older people, no matter how much their chemistry is there. You know, I think at the end of the day, it ultimately was Tom Brady's decision to leave, and that's okay. He gave New England fans 20 years of substantial happiness, constant happiness for the last 20 years, wins, championships, celebrations, so much fun. But at the end of the day, you see him thriving with these incredible weapons. He's got tight ends. He's got wide receivers. He's got running backs. He's got protection. And, you know, he's thriving at 44 years old because he's able to have a complete roster. And the Patriots obviously have not had that of late. And I think Brady was just like, I need more weapons. I can't do this all on my own. Kind of like a, you know, when Giselle yelled, "My husband can't throw and catch the ball at the same time," it's pretty much what he was saying, and in my opinion anyway. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think that they absolutely did want Tom Brady back. I think discussions were had, but they just couldn't do enough for him because they had so much confidence in him. And that speaks volumes of Brady. I think we all have a lot of confidence in him, but as an aging quarterback and the most crucial position on a football team, you need protection, you need weapons, because you can't do it all on your own.
But that directly leads to the next question, and it's a really big one, because I look at Belichick and I say, you can't supplant Brady in terms of what he's brought to the organization. You can't even supply Brady with what he had been asking for the last three seasons that he was here in New England. He leaves, he wins the Super Bowl in Tampa Bay. Now, they are coming off an offseason, the 2021 offseason. They spend a boatload of money at the skill position, like Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry, and as well as the defensive side of the ball. They bring back Kyle Van Noy, and they also bring in Matt Judon as well. Why did it take Bill Belichick a subpar season for him to finally invest in the roster in which that Brady had been asking for prior to his departure?
I think it comes down to the old cliche of you don't know what you have until it's gone. And
that's so true.
And I that's the only thing I can really think of, because I don't think that they were, you know, defying Tom Brady of what he wanted. They're like, no, we're not going to do that. You, like, we know what you need, but poo-poo on you or whatever. And it's, you know, I know that the Patriots appreciate him. They have a ton of respect for what he did while he was in New England. But when you can't, when you're so used to winning and you just kind of take that for granted, and I think a lot of Patriots fans said that too, because then you bring in Cam Newton, who's a 2015 MVP, number one pick. You know, there's a healthy Cam Newton was supposed to be a very busy, a very dominant Cam Newton. But with COVID and just not really living up to expectations, then they're back to the drawing board. And now Mac Jones is here, and there's tremendous pressure on him because obviously with the release of Cam Newton and just still trying to fill Brady's shoes. And they're still trying to find that, you know, did we find the next, not the next Tom Brady. No one's going to be the next Tom Brady, but the next best thing, because we're still reaping the benefit, like reaping what we sow, really. And letting him go left a huge hole, probably a bigger hole than they realized. But there was no reason for them to realize that until Tom Brady left for Tampa Bay.
We are joined by Lauren Campbell of Nesson on the Sugar Ride Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Now, as it pertains to the current 2021 New England Patriots, and I was talking about this during the first hour, Oh my gosh. Yesterday's game was probably the most infuriating game that I've watched over the last year now. And that's saying something, because last year there were some real doozies. But yesterday's game, it was like, what could go wrong has gone wrong for the New England Patriots. And James White going down with that hip injury is a massive loss for this Patriots offense. How concerned are you for the Patriots offense moving forward, given that you have seen Brandon Bolden struggle and as well as Ramondre Stevenson not look or have the most confidence coming into the game, given that he was benched in week one against Miami?
Yeah, so I'm not hitting the panic button yet. It is only week three. You know, people like Hunter Henry, Johnny Smith, they can turn things around. They haven't, no, I'm not going to call them a bust by any means, but they certainly have not been as productive as people would hope to at this point. You know, they're big money guys this year, and they just kind of seem like they're struggling, especially Smith, and just looked awful. Yes, the whole team looked awful yesterday, really, at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Ramondre Stevenson, he's a rookie. He'll figure it out. Losing James White indefinitely certainly is a big blow, because he's one of the best, if not the best, running backs you have out there. And he's somebody that the team really needs, not just for his production, but for that veteran presence as well. He's a well-respected guy. He's a leader. And losing that certainly will not do the Patriots any favors. But, you know, it's hard to see. It could be worse. It could be 0-3. It could have been, I mean, if it didn't for the Jets, they probably would be 0-3 at this point. I'm cautiously optimistic. I think by, you know, another 2 or 3 weeks that this is still the same old same, I'm going to start to be worried, because, you know, it's not Mac Jones that's the problem. He has got no protection. Josh McDaniels doesn't seem like he's just letting him air it out. He's dependent on this run game. I don't understand why he had so many run plays yesterday in crucial moments. But I'm like, oh my God, like, I want to run through my TV and try to start my own game calling and play calling. And I'm like, I mean, whatever, I'm not a coach. But what I'm seeing is what they're doing isn't working. And like you said, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong for the Patriots. But I'll take 1-3, 1-2 over 0-3 any day. But no panic button yet. But my hand is definitely, like, hovering, and it's ready to hit it if necessary.
Are you at 1-3? Because you said it, mistakenly or not, that they were probably going to lose to Tampa Bay on Sunday night. And you know, and we both know, and of course the millions across New England know, an angry Tom Brady is not a Tom Brady you want to face, especially given how things went yesterday between the Buccaneers and the Rams, in which that the Buccaneers lost to the Rams. And we all know about the homecoming, the pageantry, all that fun stuff and so forth. Now, what is your expectation in terms of the atmosphere and what that is going to be like down in Foxborough this Sunday night?
I mean, I think the atmosphere is going to be electric. I think, you know, at the end of the day, Tom Brady did elect to leave on his own. And that stings all Patriots fans. Oh, so many Patriots fans grew up with Tom Brady. You know, people just getting into football, growing up with Tom Brady. He was New England for 20 years. But I think at the end of the day, Pats fans are relentless at times. I'm expecting Brady to get an ovation at the beginning of the game and then just get mercifully booed for the rest of it. Like, they'll do their happy homecoming, whatever, and they'll pay their respects to him, as though he's not dead by any means, but, you know, they'll remember what he did. But once it's game time, it's game time, and it's no more cheering for Brady. They'll be very, very loud. Obviously, this is the first time Tom Brady is returning to Gillette as an opponent. So I think, I mean, I'm like, it's like bittersweet for me, just because obviously I want Tom Brady to still succeed. My very first memory of watching the NFL is the Patriots losing the Super Bowl in 96, and then I just felt like all of a sudden it was Tom Brady. Like, I remember so clear as day when Drew Bledsoe got hit. And I was like, nothing's really gone right since they lost that Super Bowl, huh? And it was just like, after that, it was Tom Brady. Like, I was, I don't know, 8, 9 years old when he came in. And it was just, that's how I grew up with watching football. So it's bittersweet. But I think, you know, like I said, the fans will be just like, hi, nice to see you, thanks for everything, but now it's game time. But unfortunately, I don't think the Patriots have much of a chance here. I think that because, you alluded to it, you said an angry Tom Brady. Nobody wants to face an angry Tom Brady, especially after a loss, especially after how they lost and everything like that. So I think that an angry Tom Brady, very motivated Tom Brady, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch this happen, but I think that I don't want to call it a blowout by any means, but it also wouldn't surprise me, especially with the injuries, and we saw like everything that was happening yesterday with the Patriots. Just, oh boy, it's going to be fun, but it's probably going to result in a loss.
We're talking with Lauren Campbell of Nesson as she is on the Sugar Ride Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Last question I'll ask you, and we're going to circle back to the pennant race. We're now officially in the final week of the regular season. This is it. Six games. That's all there is left. What are your expectations for the Boston Red Sox in these last six games, and do you think they will be able to retain home field advantage for the American League wildcard game, or do you think they will end up beginning their playoff run on the road?
So I do think that they will end up ultimately hosting the wildcard game, and that's mainly because of their schedule and the Yankees and Blue Jays schedule. The Yankees are playing the Blue Jays starting Tuesday, and that's a big series either way. It's going to benefit the Red Sox either way. They just have to win. The Red Sox just have to win, and they either separate themselves from the Blue Jays or they gain more ground on the Yankees. But because of how the schedules are and how these last six games are going to go, and the Red Sox are playing very poor teams to end the season, benefits them greatly. So I think they'll be able to retain, even if it's a half game, I don't think anyone's going to run away with this wild card division, but I do think that the Red Sox ultimately will be hosting the Yankees for a wild card game.
Lauren Campbell of Nesson, she has been an absolute treat to be on this program. This first program back in studio live in a year and a half on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Lauren, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the program. I had you on the podcast before, and for all of you that are listening and don't know, you can check out the podcast on iHeartRadio and as well as Odyssey, formerly radio.com as well. Absolute treat to have you on the program. Thank you so much for taking the time to join.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for the rest of our respective team seasons this year.
Absolutely. I look forward to talking to you again on the program.
Absolutely.
My pleasure. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
That was Lauren Campbell of Nesson as she joined the Sugar Ride Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. I'm going to start wrapping up the program now, as I got about another couple moments left. I will be back on the air with you live in studio Wednesday, special time, filling in for the voicemobile, Joyce the Voice. I'll be filling in for her program as she is out this week on religious holiday. I will be in studio doing the show live for her from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. this Wednesday afternoon right here on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. I look forward to speaking with you then. Can't wait. Coming up next, Black Stripes or White Keys. That's coming up next right here on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Thank you for all of you who have listened in. I'm happy to be back. I'll talk to you guys again on Wednesday. Peace out, everybody. We'll be right back.